From what I've gathered, you grew up nice and sheltered with mama's pretty stories and your own made up fury.
And mama gave me a magic clicker. Well, yes, I think it's true and fair to say. Come on in and listen. Lost words, you're being missing. Now the fire you're bearing.
Well, it wouldn't be Flux the Foes Prime if it wasn't late. We are back from our winter vacation, so to speak, to bring you the 2023 Game Awards. That's right, because we are late, so we're going to be way after everyone else has done their Game of the Year conversations and favorite games and stuff like that. We're going to start ours right now. So it is I, Kevin Austin, and with me is the champion of light to my herald of darkness, Mr. Lucas Rose.
Yes, that is I, the champion of light. You're right.
I mean, it works based on our camera conversation before
that's
we started,
true.
Right?
So. That's true. I was on the surface of the sun, which, as everybody knows, is where all the champions of light reside. So
yeah, makes sense. So yeah, we're going to do some game awards here tonight. It's going to be kind of a looser show than normal, believe it or not. Basically, you know, December, there isn't a lot of new video game news and not a ton of releases in December to really talk about. So we're taking an opportunity to reflect back on 2023 and the games that we enjoyed. So, you know, by all means, there'll be some hot takes, I'm sure. And, you know, maybe some disagreement with the rest of the industry on some. I know I have a few on my list that will hopefully incite a reaction from Lucas, and yeah. We'll go from there. But yeah, we're doing some standard categories and we'll go through them, give our individual picks and kind of talk a little bit about why, and maybe bash the other person's pick if need be, if we feel so, or comment if we agree, you know.
Yep.
But we're just gonna have some fun with it, and then to kick off the year and then back to the normal routine come February.
I'm excited because I'm usually not current enough to actually do anything like this. I'm always like, oh, I think probably in the last couple of years I've been current, but before that it was always like, oh, Lucas is playing some game from 10 years ago. That makes sense. So
yeah, it's definitely, I was surprised too, because looking at other people's picks for like Game of the Year and different game awards that I've seen out there, like most of the stuff that was nominated or won, I'm like, oh, I did play that. Yeah. I can comment on that. I can agree or I can disagree.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of it is thankful due to game reviews, and thankful some of it is for us being game share partners where we're not having to purchase as much, right?
Yep.
So yeah, it's good that we can actually be somewhat knowledgeable, although we will commit to not being timely. So let's kick it off, Lucas. Let's talk about the category that doesn't always make sense to me. And I was listening to Bored with Video Games, our buddies over in PSVG, and they talked about their favorite games on their most recent podcast. They didn't do categories like this, but they did talk about the Game Awards. And they had some commentary about this and why this is always a category. Best strategy / sim game.
Yeah.
Because they're not necessarily similar types of games.
Not at all.
Right, like if you play like The Sims, or you know, and then like a Command and Conquer, those aren't the same type of game, right? Like it doesn't add up. Or City Skylines with, you know, StarCraft, stuff like that, like it doesn't line up, but they kind of just lump them together, I think, because there's not enough of them. It's kind of like the Academy Awards, you get like what musical and comedy is together for some reason.
You're just like, oh, come on. Well, and when one really stands out, that I feel like they tend to dominate the one side, like, oh, there were a lot of musicals this year, or oh, there were a lot of comedies this year. But then if you had one really stand out on the other side, it seems to be like, oh, we got to mention it because it's lumped in with the rest of the category. I agree, because like the only argument you need for splitting these is, like you said, Company of Heroes 3 can be nominated in the same category as Power Wash Simulator.
Yeah, right, exactly.
These are two very different games. Yep. Like, come on.
And I thought about splitting it for these exact reasons, but then in my head I'm like, I don't know if I have a favorite or a standout in both of these categories to do it. And
yes.
Lord only knows, with games reviews, I've kind of become the guy that if there's a something simulator, they just give it to me. They don't even ask. And, you know, largely I do enjoy a lot of these ones. I'm playing Bakery Simulator right now, actually.
Oh, nice.
which is fun. But, you know, you also get a lot of bad ones. Like, a lot of the car mechanic and motorcycle mechanic ones, they're not great.
Yeah.
So it's tough. But for me, my pick, so I'll go first on this one.
Sure.
For people that know me, probably won't surprise anybody here. Pikmin 4 is my pick for best strategy slash sim game. One of my favorite games of the year. Obviously, I've been waiting a long time for Pikmin 4, you know, a decade, I think, between games. And we all know the history of my family. My wife absolutely loves Pikmin. This was the best Pikmin game I think they've ever done. So they just continually to learn and enhance and make things more fun. And out of all the strategy games I played this year, and I did play a few, I feel like this one executed the best in not only the mechanics of a strategy game, you know, you have your squad, your Pikmin that you're controlling and sending out on missions, but it also was able to do things that we don't always get with these kind of games. A good story, you know, and it was lighthearted. It was enjoyable. It was fun. It put a smile on your face to play. The music was great. The graphics for Switch especially were really, really good. They do some really great environmental things in the Pikmin games.
Yeah.
And they just continue to stand out, but it was just a great game with a ton of content as well. So for me, it was kind of a no-brainer. I thought about some of the other, you know, options out there, but for me, none of them came close to Pikmin 4 for me.
Nice. I'm glad that you brought Pikmin 4 up, because that's one of those games where I feel like it slipped through the cracks for me specifically. And honestly, when you started with this category at the beginning of the show, I was looking through, because I have a terrible memory, but I was looking through. This used to be my jam category at first, like a certain span of my life. And
yeah, RTS and stuff. Yeah.
Yep. And I'm looking through it, and I'm just like, I don't think I've even played one of these. it's definitely my lightest category, unfortunately, and I do feel bad about that. But I do have, so for my nomination, and like I said, I haven't played Pikmin 4, but I'm glad you brought it up, because I put it on hold at the library so I can get it and play it. I have City Skylines 2, and I know that's a little bit of a controversial pick, because they had so many issues at launch, but I did finally play it, and I do know that whether or not, so there's some controversy of whether or not they've actually improved things, like they went so far as to say, like, the simulation is now so in depth that you can follow a person's life from, like, day to day and see where they go, and it'll all make sense. You can see where they drive. Like, for one example, somebody who is going to work, they actually have to find a parking spot, and they will spend time trying to find
one. Geez.
Yeah, and like that granular simulation. And so with that, there's some speculation that it may or may not be running that granular, but regardless, I would say it's an improvement, as well as the fact that a lot of the things that they improved in City Skylines as a whole in the sequel is stuff that people were modding into the game because it just needed improvements, like the way that when you're running all your roads out, sometimes you can't do exactly what you want to do, or like if you could just have more control over how this light works, like if there was a dedicated right-hand turn lane or left-hand turn lane or whatever the case may be. They listened to a lot of that and included it in the sequel so that stuff wouldn't have to be added in later.
And I
appreciate it, because like half the game for me is trying to figure out how to get your people from point A to point B efficiently, especially as your city grows and you can really see. I mean, they've always done a good job of being able to see like where the problem areas are, but then you also need to provide solutions, because then you're just doing workarounds, and then you feel like the game it's kind of stacked against you. So I was happy to see all these inclusions in the sequel. So I'm looking forward to playing more, and I'm realizing, like, I know Company of Heroes 3 was a nomination in this category. I used to love that game.
Yeah, me too.
I played those two. And I'm like, man, that came out already? I feel like I say about everything. So, yep. City Skylines 2 for me.
All right, fair enough. Next one, best sports slash racing games. Another one that is a combination category, although I don't have too much of a problem with this, right? Like, there's not enough standout racing games per year to give it its own category, right?
Yeah.
And racing is a sport, right? You know, you have NASCAR, you have F1. Now, not all racing games are in that category, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah,
you know.
I agree.
So for best sports racing game, why don't you go first this time, Lucas? What's your pick?
Okay, so I had a choice here, and then I said, wait a minute, what am I doing? Because I could be like, you know, this is the best simulation racing game or simulation sports game. And I thought about, what did I actually play in this category the most for this year? Besides, I'm not even going to say hockey. Hockey's like, that's its own thing because it doesn't really count. I'm super biased. I'm going with Lego 2K Drive. It wasn't even nominated by anybody.
Sure.
But I realized, I'm like, I played this way more than I played Forza Motorsports.
Yes.
So, and like, I'm not a big Lego person, but when I do Legos, all I usually want to do is make cool cars and vehicles.
Sure.
And this allowed me to do that. So I was like, heck yeah, Lego 2K Drive, let's go.
That's fair. So, I you know, we know I'm a Lego fan. On the Lego Masters TV show this past season, they did a crossover episode. Did you see this?
Where, I did see it.
And they actually put that car in the game. I did re-download the game to find out, and the car was there.
Good, because I had not seen if they did, but it was the only one that deserved to be in the game.
Oh yeah, for sure, the shark car. But yeah, it was there. It was free, so like, even though that game does have a lot of microtransactions in it, it did not for that. It was a free download. It's like, that's kind of cool. So I did download that and drive around a little bit, cause some chaos, you know.
Nice.
So as you had a controversial pick, I would say, for this one, right? Like, I don't think anybody has this on their list. I think, Lucas, I also have one, too, that nobody has on their list or their pick as well. Also in the racing realm, I agree with you. Forza Motorsport did not do it for me. I did play it. You know, I did review it, too, but it wasn't. I like the Horizon games better. Like, I like the fun stuff, which is why Lego 2K is a great pick. Mine is also in the same realm, if nobody would have picked it, and that's Disney Speedstorm.
Oh, yeah.
So people are rolling their eyes and changing the channel right now on this one, but hear me out. So Disney Speedstorm, kart racing game, we all know that. Like, it's not your typical strategic racing thing.
Yeah.
I honestly feel that this is the closest thing, if not equal to, a Mario Kart quality kart racer. Like, more so than like Nicktoons Racing and the other ones we see. I really, really feel like they pulled this off extremely well. Are there, you know, microtransactions, season passes, stuff like that? Yes. You don't have to purchase any of them. Everything in that game can be unlocked if you play it enough and don't want to spend any money. Like, so you don't have to.
That's a good start.
So that's a great strategy there. If you want to buy and you want to support, you can. If not, no big deal. You know, it's fine. It's a free-to-play game. It did not go the Disney Dreamlight Valley route where they decided to continue charging. You know, Speedstorm is a free-to-play game that has optional microtransactions. Do I think Mario Kart goes that way in the future? Not free to play, no, but I do feel like there's going to be microtransactions and stuff in the next iteration, more so than the DLC packs they do now. I think they realized that it's cash cow. Every Mario Kart player bought all of the DLC for it, so it's a no-brainer next time around. But Disney Speedstorm, control-wise, great. The course design is fantastic. Music is unbelievable in this game.
Oh my gosh, I would get it stuck in my head, especially the Mulan one. Make a man out of you. I was like, dang, how have I never heard this before? This is it's a banger.
It is. And you know, they take the twists and manipulate the track. So you're not, you're playing on the same track. Yes. But you play it in different ways, right? As you go through the circuits and stuff, you know, whether it's in reverse or you have to take a different route and stuff like that. There's different obstacles in your way. There's always new characters being added with every season as well. So they haven't stopped releasing more content for it to give you more drivers and stuff like that too. So, I just think it's a lot of fun, and it's that same quality where, like, Mario Kart 8, I've played the hell out of that game, right? Like, it's still the best out there, don't get me wrong, but I'm kind of done playing with it. It doesn't pull my interest anymore unless somebody's like, hey, you want to play Mario Kart? Then I'll do it. I don't think on my own, I should play Mario Kart. Speedstorm, yeah. I do occasionally say, I should check out and see what they change or what they added. And I do regularly play it at least a couple times a month just to check in and see what's going on. So it's a game that got its hooks on me. I did have the early access back in April, so the full free-to-play version came out in October. But I've been playing it a couple times a month since April, and there's not many games that I can say I've done the same with. So Disney Speedstorm is my pick for best sports slash racing game.
Nice. You know, I just want to comment, too. I don't understand what Nintendo is doing with Mario Kart, because the amount of time it took between deciding to come out with downloadable content and when the game came out, it just makes no sense to me whatsoever. So if they had that trickle of like new content, which I do think the microtransaction deal can help with, like, yeah, paying artists to make stuff, mm-hmm, and being able to actually do that. I would be happy to see them do that if it meant, yeah, like more characters and more tracks. Me too. And stuff. So
yeah, I agree.
Nice. Yeah, we're gonna get hate mail for those.
Oh, they're not real gamers. They don't even play a good sports game. Mind you, I did play a buttload of sports games this year, more than I normally do. But very few of them would get me to want to keep playing and going back. The racing games, however, did. All of them that I played this year, I think, all pulled me more than the sports games did.
I don't know what's going on with racing games, but they have somehow been able to, as far as I can see, avoid the yearly release where they don't actually update anything. They're just like, new graphics, but everything else seems to be the same, including bugs and unfair things. And I don't know. Like, I feel that way about hockey, especially, obviously, is that it. But I've checked out Madden too, and I still feel like,
just give me a roster update. That's all I need.
Played Madden, and I'm like, why am I only throwing interceptions constantly? So I was like, I'm done. And I saw it was a problem for other people too. So
I'm done. Yeah, I hear you. All right, moving on. Best family game. So this is the one that you would say, you know, hey, this is the ones I want to sit down, play with my wife, play with my kids, you know, to get more people engaged that maybe aren't the core gamers in the family, or friend group for that matter. Or the best games, just sit down and play with your kids. So you went first last time, so I'll go first this time. This one's kind of a no brainer for me, at least. Super Mario Wonder.
Okay.
Had a lot of fun with that one. It was, you know, colorful. We were due, I think, for a 2D Mario platformer, because that's the tent pole, you know, or the measuring pole, I guess, for every platformer is like, hey, can you do what Mario does? And they did it again to make a game that just made you smile, made you feel good, fun music, unique, creative ways to still adapt to a 2D platformer, which after all this time, you think we've seen it all. Nintendo somehow manages to pull something else out of their hat. And as far as the family aspect,
it was the drugs. It was the drugs that
it definitely, all the wonder seeds.
Yeah. Crack them and smoke them.
As far as the family aspect, what appeals to this one was the addition of kind of the invulnerable characters, right? So even if you had people that weren't great at platforming or not great at the air quotes combat in a Mario game, like they would always like run right into the Goomba as opposed to on the Goomba, you were able to use the Yoshi and Nabbits and, you know, be able to still have fun and enjoy that game together without having to rely on them to survive with you, right? So it made it more adaptable for the younger kids or for the not younger kids that just aren't great at video games. So I think that was a good way to still include everyone and have some fun. And plus, when you get four players going in that game, it's just complete chaos like it normally is with those games. So, but it's all good, friendly, family fun. You don't find yourself screaming at each other like when you play Overcooked. So, you know.
I love it. So for me, I obviously that was in contention, but I went in a different direction. And there, I have some qualms, if you will, with Wonder. Because Mario Wonder is not an easy game at times, especially for new players. And granted, they will tell you a general difficulty level of each level that you're going to attempt, which is nice. My biggest problem is my kids like certain characters, like my daughter wants to be Princess Peach or Princess Daisy.
Okay. Yeah.
So the problem is those characters that help younger kids play don't help at all if they don't want to be Yoshi or Nabbit or whatever. And so for that reason, I didn't pick Mario Wonder.
That's fair, though.
I chose Disney's Illusion Island.
Oh, okay.
And it may not be the best game as far as games go, but as far as family games go and being able to like help my other, like my kids who might, especially my younger daughter who doesn't quite have the dexterity to do some of these things required of you by games. Like you can help people, you can lower a rope and you can help them get up jumps that they might not be able to accomplish themselves. You can hug each other to give yourself an extra life or an extra heart. I mean, no matter what character you pick, you can choose the difficulty for that character based on how many hearts you have. So there's even one that basically makes you invulnerable by giving you an ice heart. And so that's like my daughter's able to choose Minnie Mouse, but, you know, be invulnerable regardless of what character she chose. And the pacing of the levels, as far as like as far as we've gotten so far, have been easy on the easier side. There's just not a lot of actual like platforming asked of you. Obviously you're still making jumps and you got to double jump and stuff, but there aren't levels so far where you're like on rails that are basically pushing you from left to right.
Yeah, no, like it's more Metroidvania than anything where you're more exploring and getting from point A to point B.
Exactly. Yep. So it's a little bit more laid back. And so it might not be like what I always want to play, but at least when I'm playing it, I know that like my family isn't getting frustrated with the game and wanting to throw the controller because some of the things, another thing that's frustrating with Wonder is whoever has the crown. Like,
yeah.
When you get into some of those things that you have to do, like when you have to bounce up as one of, I don't even know what they're called, but those things that jump when you jump.
Yeah.
And then you're going off screen and you get separated. It's like impossible. So I have to be like, listen, let me just do this really quick and then we'll all play again. So those parts can be frustrating sometimes. So that is why I chose Illusion Island.
That's a good pick. A lot of people overlook that game. I did play that as well. And I agree with everything you said there. It's an often overlooked game, but hey, bottom line, both games are only available on Nintendo, so.
Boom.
They're doing something right. Next up, best fighting game, something that we typically both get into every year, you know, different fighting games come up here. For me, no-brainer, Slam Dunk, Mortal Kombat 1.
Yes, sir. I
don't,
agree.
Yeah, I don't, there's not even much to say here. The mechanics are great, they improved on the last one, amazing story. Great cast, great voice acting, with the exception of what's her face?
Natari, I think.
Yeah, name. Yeah. What's her real name?
Oh,
Megan Fox.
Yes, thank you.
Took me a minute to remember. See, it's so bad, I don't even want to remember it. So, I mean, I liked everything Mortal Kombat 1 did. The only thing I'm not crazy about, and the one thing that keeps me from going back to it consistently right now is. The seasonal stuff that they're doing doesn't really, it doesn't motivate me to want to come back, right? Like, I'll come back when they do a story DLC or they add new characters to try them out. But ultimately, like, once I beat the game, I was kind of like, okay, I'm good. You know, ready for the next Mortal Kombat or the next story DLC and play it. Because they do an amazing job with the story and the narrative, you know.
Yeah, it's very cinematic. Natara, by the way.
Okay.
I have to correct myself or someone will kill me. You know, I tried out Street Fighter VI, and while I applaud the idea of like this open world, you can fight anybody idea.
Yeah.
It didn't really work for me, honestly. Yeah. But more than that, I think just for me functionally, I feel like there's two types of fighters. There's fighters like us who like playing fighting games for the story, for the characters, for the lore, whatever the case may be. And then there's people who play it competitively.
Sure.
And, like, it's all about, you know, crazy stuff like they get into with Smash Brothers and
yeah.
How many frames it takes to do a move or whatever. And
how many people combos. You can sexually assault.
Exactly. Yes. As long as they're underage.
Sure.
So for me, I think from all those aspects, that's why I also choose Mortal Kombat 1. So it's just, like, the last one I played besides this might be either Soul Calibur or Dead or Alive.
Okay.
It's all like fairly similar genres.
Yep.
And neither of them have really been current recently. So
nah, I even went back and checked out Killer Instinct.
Oh yeah,
to
yeah,
see
yeah.
the newer one, and it's like it's still like it's not, they don't even come close. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like what I like, Lucas.
I likes what I likes.
I like what I like. Yeah. All right. Best RPG. What's your pick for that one? This one, tough. I had to think about this one for a little bit.
Yeah, I did. I did too. And I had to think about like, what does RPG mean for me? Because now it's like, well, what kind of RPG? ARPG? JRPG? XRPG? I don't know what that one is. So for me, I went with Baldur's Gate 3.
Okay.
When I think of an RPG, I think of like point and click, you know, the classic
turn-based combat.
Turn-based combat is always a big one for me. So that's where I'm coming from. And if you've listened to our show, you know, I've talked about it a little bit already. They're doing some amazing things at Larian Studios, and I would not fault anybody choosing other options just because there is a wide variety, and it's only getting more and more separate.
Yeah.
From what you like. So it's a wide open category. I'm going with Baldur's Gate 3.
Okay. Yeah. It's definitely a wide open category. And I just think about it too. And Baldur's Gate came up, and, you know, Final Fantasy came up, and there's all different ones. Cause Cyberpunk could even be considered one with their Liberty City or whatever it's called.
Yep.
I mean, they're all technically RPGs. Even Hogwarts Legacy, I had to think about, like, yeah. that technically yeah. could be an RPG. I'm like, you got the gear, you have the metric there for leveling up. So, but ultimately what I landed on is I went old school, Lucas, and I went Sea of Stars.
Yep, that was a big one for me to consider as well.
Yeah, it checked all the boxes as far as nostalgia appeal. It's very much Chrono Trigger inspired heavy. Great narrative, great soundtrack, beautiful pixel art, of course. Turn-based combat still, but you know, you had some button timing and certain things you had to do, so you're still somewhat engaged in that turn-based combat. Yeah. It wasn't just like execute and let it be.
Yep.
But yeah, overall it was such a solid old school RPG, and there's been a lot of those over the past, I want to say a couple of years, but realistically it's more like a decade, where they try and recapture that old RPG feeling, right? The old JRPG feeling, right? Like the old games, Octopath Traveler, all those kinds of things. For me, Sea of Stars though blows all that stuff out of the water, and it is the closest thing to those retro great games, Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy 3, technically 4 in Japan, like those, even Earthbound, like stuff like that. Like these games are where I put at the top of the echelon here. Sea of Stars is right up there with them, and kind of just smoked everything else over the past couple of years that tries to replicate that for me.
But yeah, I agree. I mean, it is kind of the bar for what, if you want to make that, because it's basically its own category now, indie RPG.
Yep.
It is definitely setting the bar for like what to expect. And if you even come close, like that's still good enough in most cases, but like you really want to go above and beyond. It made me feel like I was playing Chrono Trigger, but I also didn't feel like I was playing Chrono Trigger. I know that makes no sense, but it definitely stands on its own. If you had no love of Chrono Trigger or never experienced it, I think it still would attract people who are just checking it out on a whim.
Yeah, so I agree. And the other thing too, like it's a lot bigger than I expected too, right? Like I thought it was gonna be like not a short game, because most of these kind of games aren't really short, but I didn't think it was gonna go on as long as it did. And like it's at a certain act in the game, it really just kind of changes and pivots, and I was like, oh okay, I wasn't quite sure I saw this coming, and now it's like a whole other game after that. So
yeah, I'm still working on it, unfortunately. I haven't gotten as far as I'd like to, so I'm not sure what you're referencing, but even the little bit that I have played, it doesn't take long for you to realize this is a whole new beast.
Yeah. All right. So moving on, best action/adventure game. Some of them kind of call these out and kind of separate them. I've seen that in some categories, like best action adventure game and best adventure game. And I'm like, well, how do you have both? Like the Game Awards literally had that as two categories, best action adventure and then just best adventure. And I was like,
best adventure has always been like best point and click, but we aren't getting a lot of those nowadays.
No, and I forget who won it in the Game Awards stuff, but it wasn't even one like that. It was just a standard game there. But for me, Spider-Man 2 is my pick here for best action adventure game. Okay. You know, it's a sequel that just keeps delivering, right? Like, they took Spider-Man 1, they made Miles Morales, which made improvements and changes to the game on a slightly smaller scale. Mm-hmm. And then they made Spider-Man 2, which took more changes from Miles Morales in the first Spider-Man and made it big again, right?
Yeah.
They were able to balance, you know, two separate heroes that didn't feel the same. They each had their own like plot points and storyline points that made them feel special. So no one was a side character.
Yeah.
And I mean, just the controls in that game, like nobody can argue that web swinging is still amazing to feel and play and just experience. Right. Mm-hmm. Combat is satisfying. Even the side missions and collectibles are interesting and entertaining and different to do to kind of break up your main story points. And you didn't really ever feel like it was a chore to do those either. Like, they were just different enough each time that you're like, okay, yeah, I'm still doing this X type mission, but each time I do one, it's slightly different than a different one. So it feels they put that love and care in for it. And again, I know we've said it numerous times, Insomniac was the best thing Sony ever did was buying them. Like, it's just amazing what they do.
I wonder if they knew what they were getting, or if they were like, you know, like, they're going to grow, they're going to bloom into this awesome, amazing studio, or if they just were like, all right, let's take a chance on it and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, they did great things, you know, before kind of bursting into the last gen scene, right? And then, like, mm-hmm. or I guess two gens ago, I don't even know at this point, but like when they did Sunset Overdrive, right? Like, that was their first, you know, kind of blowout game, I think, for them. And it was like it was on Xbox, you know, I didn't like it. So it was like they made that game. And then after that, that's when Sony decided, like, we're going to buy you, which I thought was weird. Because I'm like, the games I played prior, I enjoyed more than Sunset Overdrive. So I don't know what they saw, but
yeah.
I feel like they saw something, because that did. I mean, let's be honest, Sunset Overdrive like laid the groundwork for what Spider-Man could be. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's just way different, cranked up to 10. But yeah, they did it. They made the move, and it's the best thing they've ever done.
I didn't know. I'm looking at their website. I didn't know they made Edge of Nowhere, which is a VR game, or at least it was. I consider it to be a VR game.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I was going to say. So they split, the Game Awards had split action game and action adventure into.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay, okay.
Yeah, so if you look at the categories, I kind of can see where they're coming at, but like, it is still weird. It's still weird.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I'm like, because then how do you category what's what? Like, they give a reasoning behind it, but in my head I'm still like, it could still be the same thing. Like,
yeah, mm-hmm.
You don't split strategy sim, but you split those two apart, and like one of them is still in both. One could be in both categories, which to me seems weird.
Yeah, it does. If they can split that but not strategy and sim, then
yeah,
I don't know what we're doing here. Well, for me, That was definitely one that was in contention for me. But what I had to think about more was the adventure side of the equation. And while I do really enjoy Spider-Man 2, the one thing that I didn't love, I didn't hate it, but I didn't like love it either, was the exploration side of things. I think it's just because it's a city. You know what I mean? And no matter where I ended up, I was always like, oh man, this looks really cool. All right, now I'm going to go do the thing I came here to do. Like, I never really wanted to explore every nook and cranny.
Sure.
And so with that in mind, my choice was Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Okay.
This game was very, it just made me feel like excited for Star Wars again. If that mm-hmm. makes any sense.
Sure.
I've always, when it comes to Star Wars, the things I've always liked are the environments, the aliens that we don't, like, we get a glimpse of in a movie or whatever, but then we don't really get the nitty gritty of that place. And so, like, what are those stories that are going on in the background or whatever? Mm-hmm. And I feel like Jedi Survivor had a lot of that. One thing that I enjoyed but also kind of bugged me was, if you've played the game, there's one world in particular that has a lot going on. It's where you set up your bar. I can't remember what the name of it is. But there's a lot going on in this one world. And then everywhere else you go is not as big
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
As that. Most of the time, the next places you go are just your typical fairly linear areas that you would have seen in the first game. But yeah, there was just a lot to explore. There was a lot to do. You could garden. You'd learn about different flora and fauna, and a lot of like side quests to go on where you had to use your powers or your abilities to kind of platform basically into new areas. And so it was kind of like this Metroidvania mix in there as well. And so I don't know, it was really doing it for me, and I found myself pretty much uncovering almost every bit of that game. And so for that reason, and I mean, not to mention the amazing, probably the best we've ever seen lightsaber combat in any Star Wars game to date. Yeah, so
definitely.
Yeah, that's my pick.
Nice. All right. So the next category I put in just for us.
Yes.
Because these aren't in anything here, but I'm like, you know what? This is something we would totally do if we were running a game thing.
Oh, for sure.
And we put in best horror game. So we like the spooky time games, right? We
like
the gore. We like the guts. We like the monsters. We like the darkness. What is your pick for best horror game of 2023?
Tough one. Yes. Because there's a lot of good stuff in here, and there's a lot of shit. I'm just gonna put it out there. It's kind of like the sim genre all over again. It's just put it out, get as much out there. And it's funny to me that ends up the case in movies too. I don't know what it is about it.
Oh yeah, you're right.
That we can just do that easily. So for me, I had to think hard about this one, but I did end up going with Dead Space, the remake.
Okay.
It's hard for me to pick a remake because it's been done. You know what I mean? Like, you picked a game that came out however many years ago. But this is what I expect remakes to be. Not just like, I thought this is how I remember this game being, and then they nailed it. Not just that, but also redoing it in such a way where they go, okay, we could have done this part better, or we could have paced this out better. It's like the best version of that game, and they got to like go back and kind of edit what they did before it. And like for that reason, I'm like, okay, this is a great game then, and it's a great game now, and they were able to remake it in such a way that I was excited for it again, even though like I played Dead Space, you know, multiple times.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. For the most part, remember it. I did have a runner-up. I will save it until you answer, though. Some of these categories, I do have a runner-up just because I was like, it was this close, you know?
Yeah. So, same. My runner-up was Dead Space. So, and for like all the same reasons you said, here's my thing. Is you made an interesting point. Like, oh, well, it's a remake. It's been done before. So it's like, I'm okay with remakes. It's remasters. I'm kind of like, well, that you just upscaled some stuff. Remakes are, you know, way more involved. They kind of go from the ground up as far as the technology aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
So, and like you said, they can look and make changes and enhance things that didn't quite work, or they wanted, or they had a better vision for, but they couldn't execute because of limitations, you know.
It's like reimagining. I feel like that would be a better word than
I agree. But my pick is also a remake, Lucas.
Oh.
And that's Resident Evil 4.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, I want this one. Yeah, it was really close between the Dead Space and this, but like all the same reasons, like the game just looks better. It you know, Resident Evil 4 is a tough one, I think, for a lot of people, because there are many Resident Evil fans that consider it to be the best one, right? You know, there's a lot of argument said for that. I like a lot of the Resident Evil games, so I can't pick one to say like, well, that one's my favorite, but I did really enjoy 4 back in the day. Okay. So going back and revisiting this. And like you had said with Dead Space, the polish they put on and kind of the retooling, and well, this didn't quite work the way we wanted to, and redoing it in 4, they did all the same things here. The Capcom has been knocking it out of the park with these remakes of 2, 3, 4. Now they're just so well done, and they take a lot of care in reimagining and things, and kind of fix things and make it feel like a modern game again, right? Like, it doesn't feel like I'm playing an old game, and that's the biggest compliment you can give to a remake, I think, is like, it doesn't feel old anymore. It feels like a new game.
Yeah.
Even the DLC, the Ada Wong DLC, I played through that, and that still put a different spin on it, different mechanics on it, and it was just a lot of fun. So Yeah, I mean, for me, that was my pick. But now I'm interested to hear, see what your runner up is, and see if it was like in my considerations.
Okay. So for me, the runner up was Dead Island 2. I've been playing it a lot lately.
Yeah.
The reason it didn't make it is because while it does have horror in it, like, I wouldn't say it's necessarily as scary as something like Dead Space.
Right.
It's more like gory and gross.
Yep.
And like, if you look at these models, if you get real close, and they'll get close.
Oh yeah.
To you, you have no choice but to see just the way that they can get utterly destroyed.
Yep.
While you're bashing in brains, it's a lot of fun. But to me, that almost makes it more of an action game, as we spoke of before, than it does a horror game. I need to be scared, and I'm rarely scared in that. So,
yeah, I 100%. That's the same reason why it didn't make my list or serious consideration was exactly that. It's like, yeah, it has horror elements to it, but it's not a scary or horror game. It's more of an arcadey action game for me more than anything.
Yep.
And the humor they inject in it, there's a lot of humor in it.
Yeah, and that's, yes, there is.
And like, you can have comedy horror movies. Like, there have been some great ones, you know, right? Like, you know, but that takes away from the horror aspect when they make too many jokes, that it's like, well, you kind of pull me out of that adrenaline mode, right? That edge of my seat type thing that you get with the Dead Space, you know, a Resident Evil. Like, you're creeping around this corner or this house and you open this door. What's going to be behind this door? You don't really get that with Dead Island. It's a different game. Still unbelievable game, but just not in the horror field for me. So that's why I didn't go with that one.
Gotcha.
Moving on, best indie game for me, recap, I it's something I already gave an award to already, and that's Sea of Stars. I don't really need to recap why. It's all the same reasons I gave it best RPG. Just for me, it was the standout indie for me for this past year. So Sea of Stars for me.
Well, I'm in agreement with you. I also chose Sea of Stars. I did have a runner-up, Dave the Diver. Have you played that?
I have not. I'm waiting for it to hit the console things. I know it's on PC. Josh has spoken highly of it on Board with Video Games, but I know it's been delayed. It's only on Switch and PC right now, so I'm waiting for a PS5 or Xbox release. I definitely do want to play it, but I have not yet.
I haven't played a whole lot of it because I have it on PC. And that was a mistake. I think I might end up buying it again on Switch or somewhere else. It has a satisfying game loop. Mm-hmm. And I've heard there's just much more. I mean, I've seen it as well, but I haven't gotten super deep into it. Like, there's other stuff to do, but they've really taken care to make it more than just, like, side missions and stuff. I don't know. The game has a lot of thought put into it, and it just seemed to me like there was more to it than what I'm seeing right now, and I wanted to get into it, but lately I've just not been sitting at my computer, and that type of game, I'm just like, I don't want to play this at my computer, you know? I feel like I want a controller anyways, so I might as well just wait until I can get it on something else, and so that's why I stopped. But it definitely has piqued my interest, and I'm excited to go back and check out more of it, because I don't think I've even scratched the surface of the game. So
I agree. Yeah, I'm it's one of my most anticipated ones. I gotta look and see more when it comes out, but yeah, Josh just keeps raving about it, and I was like, I gotta get this when it comes out, because it sounds like it'd be cool.
Nice.
Moving on to best score. This was the category I did not pick an answer prior to starting the show. That's the one I missed. Thinking about sound and video games and stuff, it's weird for me because I don't always think about the music in a game. For me, I tend to lean more towards and notice more the ambient noise, right? The other things going on, the sound engineering more than the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. But for us, based on, you know, our often references to music and stuff like that, I had to go with score instead of best sound design, simply for that. So I went with Hi-Fi Rush.
Okay.
You know, I think it was up there for a lot of people. I did think about, well, I'll talk about my runner-up just in case you had picked it. It was close with my runner-up, but they are totally different once you find out what my runner-up is. So Hi-Fi Rush is just the score in this game. It's weird because it's not a score to me. It's the entire game, right? Like every stage, every movement is making a sound, and all that comes together to make the song. So it's more embedded where the score is the game. So I think for that, that's why I got the nod for me, just because it's so innovative, it's different, and it's putting a new twist on what we consider video game music, right? Like something totally different for once.
For sure. I played a little bit of that. I struggle with any of the games that have that. And I know you don't necessarily have to be on Elite, but for some reason, the way that I have all my stuff routed, there's a large discrepancy between my button press and the sound. And
so that's called alcoholism.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And old age.
That too. Yeah, sure, sure.
So they've been a little bit frustrating for me. But it's funny that you chose that, because my choice, I kind of chose for the exact opposite reason, I guess, in that it's just a very good example of a typical score. It's not doing anything crazy special, but it's just doing it well. And that's Hogwarts Legacy.
Oh, okay.
I even went so far as to buy the soundtrack, mostly because not only did I know, I mean, it's got to be good, right? How can you screw up the music? Yeah. But my wife is a big Harry Potter fan, and my kids don't know what it is yet, but I'm sure we will get into that pretty soon. Mm-hmm. But like, there's times when I'm listening to the soundtrack and I'm like, this almost sounds like it could be Star Wars. And like, to me, that's like a good, it wasn't, what's his name? Who did Star Wars? Oh gosh, the composer.
Wrong guy to ask. And we just lost Lucas, so hopefully he's going to jump back in. Looks like he's connecting now, possibly. And he's back.
Well, that was stupid. All I did was press S on my keyboard, and everything closed.
Oh, okay. Well, you were looking for who, I guess, the composer was of Star Wars.
Yeah, I sure was. John...
Ham.
No.
Mayor?
John something. Gosh.
Smith.
John Williams. Jeez Louise.
Okay.
It's my brain dying slowly from the alcoholism. So like, there's times when I'm just like, this sounds like he composed it, and I'm sure that they've taken that into account and everything. But yeah, you know, actually, in the same vein, Jedi Survivor was a runner-up for basically the exact same reason. I even put on a forum for video game vinyl, somebody was like, what's a video game that you'd like to see a soundtrack for? And I had put Jedi Survivor, because EA's track record of releasing video game vinyl is almost as bad as Nintendo's. But my wish came true, like months and months later, they did actually release it. So I did order it, but yeah, I've got more experience with Hogwarts Legacy, and I think they nailed it. And I also think it's kind of difficult to go into a pre-established
IP
and be like, all right, make a score that sounds... We know you're not John Williams, but do John Williams. Could you do
that? Yeah.
So.
Nope, that's a great pick. I didn't even think of that, but I completely agree with you. That's a great pick. My runner-up was actually Final Fantasy. But the same thing, traditional, like epic sweeping, you know, composed soundtrack stuff.
Yeah.
It's always a solid choice. But for me, the difference and the uniqueness of Hi-Fi Rush gets me, you know.
It is. Bonus I didn't even think about that.
It's just because it's such a standard. It's like, okay, you know, it's with Final Fantasy games, you know what to expect in a soundtrack as much as you know what to expect in a Madden game every year, right? It's the same thing. So it's hard to stand out when it's the same level every year. Okay, I mean, like you expect the same thing.
That's true.
Best art direction. So now we're gonna get a little bit nerdy, or Lucas can flex his film student muscles a little bit. What is your pick for best art direction?
Well, you know, I thought about this one a bit, and I mean, art direction can mean a lot of different things for different people, but for me, I thought about it and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna give it to you like X gave it to you. I went with Mario Wonder. The reason for this is just because a lot of it's just because I'm glad to see them change it up a little bit. Like we've had that kind of, we've had a few different looks of Mario over the last few years, but most of them kind of boil down to like the Bowser's Fury.
Yeah.
What was the other? I always forget the name of it. 3D.
3D Land.
Yeah, 3D Land. Like, they all kind of have that same look about them. But then they went with Mario Wonder. They went so far as to not only change the look, which I actually didn't think I would like that much when I saw the original trailers, but they also changed the way that they interact with things, like the way they go down a pipe and and they grab their hat or whatever, or they wiggle their legs. And so I'm kind of like, well, good on them for like rethinking, because they didn't have to. You know, they could have just sold us the same schlop.
People would have bought it anyway.
Exactly. And so, along with like all the effects and everything that go on with when you get the Wonder Seeds and everything, I chose Mario Wonder for my best art direction.
Nice. All right. I went in the opposite direction. you, again, are the champion of light, and I'm the herald of darkness, and my pick is Alan Wake 2
yeah,
for best art direction.
That was in the contention there.
Yeah, for me, just the design of, you know, the backdrops of everything, the different areas you go to in the game, whether it's the theme park, whether it's the original city you're in, whether it's the dark place, they were just unique and so detailed. Even if there were areas you couldn't necessarily access, they still put the care and detail. So it wasn't like that cut and paste of like, oh, here's a series of doors you can't open and go into. They all look exactly the same. They didn't do that. They fleshed everything out. The character models, I thought, were done well to give everyone kind of that realistic look and feel as you went through. The use of light and darkness, of course, is a standard there when you look at Alan Wake. The use of light and dark, of course, is the main narrative and driving force throughout that game to begin with. So continuing on through that in best art direction is, you know, what makes the most sense. So for me, yeah, Alan Wake 2 was the choice for best art direction.
Nice. Yeah, that was, like I said, definitely in contention for me. And I also liked the fact that they had the balls to use live video in conjunction with the 3D models and everything.
Yep.
But the fact that you could, sometimes I'm just like, which one is it? You know?
Yes. Yeah, you had to look sometimes. You're like, wait, is this cutscene? Is this not a cutscene? I don't really know what's going on, but
yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more. Next up, best narrative. So best, you know, storytelling in a video game. I think I might surprise you a little bit on this one, and I actually went with Spider-Man 2.
Really?
Yep. Yep. For me, so here's the thing, there were a lot of contenders for me for this, this especially, and I was kind of going through. I think for me is what was, again, is they took a story that focused on two main characters that are both playable, gave them their own branching out storylines that still converged and crossed over, right?
Yep.
As well as a massive supporting cast, whether it was friends or enemies for that matter, that all intertwined into one bigger storyline, right? And they were teasing stuff for the future, teasing stuff from the past, you know, so there was stuff going in every direction. But to me, for something I was scared of watching trailers, I'm like, man, how are they going to do all of this in a game and have it be good, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like they did it. And as a Marvel fan, a comic book fan, and a movie fan, you know, the whole multiverse of things, which I'm so sick of that, but that opens the possibilities for them to twist and turn and change any story for any reason. Just say, well, that was a different universe, right? Because in reality, in the core Spider-Man universe, Peter and Miles don't actually cross over, right? They're different universes. They do in some cases, but it's not a day-to-day thing like it is in this game.
Yeah.
But some of the plot twists in there in the game, I won't give them away for people who haven't had a chance to play this yet, but some of the plot twists and changes they did haven't been done in the narrative story thing. So they were still able to surprise me with certain story elements that I didn't see coming or didn't expect to happen the way they did. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's a broader, you know, it brings in a broader audience, right? Like you were still able to appeal to those core fans who were like, this doesn't happen this way. But to be like, man, I never thought about what if they did this, you know, and this is awesome, you know, for the fact the way they did it. So yeah, just kudos to them. For me, that's kind of what gave it the edge over the competition for best narrative for me.
Nice. You know what? I'm in full agreement with everything that you said. I also chose Spooderman 2. But I will say what did it for me is the fact, like, for narrative, sometimes a big factor for me in this category is the timing of everything. I think of Grand Theft Auto as a good example. Usually the narrative is great, right? Especially in the later entries. But one of the biggest problems that Grand Theft Auto 3 or Grand Theft Auto, well, 4 and 5 especially, is they give you agency over what you do in between missions and everything, right? And a lot of the time that can really ruin the pacing of the story. And I'll come back and be like, well, you know, I'll take a break in the middle of this huge arc, and then I come back and it doesn't have the impact that it probably would if I just kept going through the story missions. And so, like, it's tough for me to say, like, oh, that was a great narrative, because it doesn't, it's not as cohesive as it probably could have been if I hadn't just, you know, let's see how many cars I can blow up with a car with a rocket launcher. Or but, like, Spider-Man also has its diversions and distractions, but I feel like they only add to the narrative. So, like, you had already said about the side quests and everything. Like, I feel like I'm still being Spider-Man. Even though I'm not doing the main story. And so, like, just that feeling alone in the cohesiveness of everything was really what, like, set it above pretty much any other narrative game that I was considering in this category. I got a question for you while we're on the subject of Spooderman 2. How did you feel about his last suit that he makes, Miles Morales? There's some
I like it.
Derision.
You talking about the one where it's, this isn't really spoilers because it's just a costume, but where the dreads are at the top?
Yes.
And I liked it. I liked it.
I didn't mind it as much as, like, when I first read that people were, some people didn't like it. I'm like, I can see that. But then when I saw the reasonings, I'm like, I like the hair coming out. I think, I think that looks cool.
It emphasizes, cause you gotta remember, like, we know it's Miles Morales behind the mask, right? Like, but people don't. Like, the people in that world don't. This gives him a chance to highlight his own diversity in a very diverse population of New York, right? Like, and where he is. I am completely fine with that. And it gives him a different feel than Peter, right? So even with all the different costumes and suits you get in Spider-Man, one of the things I didn't like is it was almost always a variant from Miles that made it look like he was Peter. Like, there was always a variant of the suit that made him look like the traditional Spider-Man.
There was,
I'm like,
a lot of that.
And I'm like, he's not Spider-Man. He is different, right? Like, he has different powers, different abilities. He's a different person coming from a different background, different motives. Like, ultimately, yes, they're the hero. They are the Spider-Man. There's that in common, but they are very different personas. And I think that that helped highlight that more in that choice of suit that he, you know, made on his own. To make it that way. So I liked it. I didn't have a problem. And that's actually, once I got that, that's the only suit I kept on him for the rest of the game. So I liked it. I liked it enough.
To your point of that too, all of, like, my favorite suits for him are always the ones that are, like, one of the ones that comes to mind is when he's wearing the gym shorts and that with his getup. So it was a nice way to kind of incorporate all of that, but then finally get a Spider-Man suit proper.
Yeah, make him look more like a hero than a kid playing dress up. I mean, yeah, he has abilities and stuff, but it looks less amateur, right?
Yeah,
like a pro superhero at that point.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. So
it's like the difference between the original Iron Man armor and Iron Man 1 to what he ended up with at the end of the saga there.
Exactly.
But, next, best game direction. So kind of, you know, art direction is a part of game direction, right? But that's only one aspect of it. But for me, it's the same winner, and that's Alan Wake 2. Just simply between the set designs, as you talked about, the modeling of use of live and you know, generated, and then you have the light and dark effects in there and the shadowing, just the direction and the way the game went. So again, it's another game with the two in it. It's another game that has two main characters that you balance back and forth. I think the way they did it was unique. Now, it wasn't the same as Spider-Man, where it was more, I feel like the Spider-Man narrative was more intertwined, right? Like throughout the entire game.
Yeah, you were definitely guided a little bit.
Exactly. Alan Wake, you have Saga and you have Alan, of course. And, you know, once you're able to flip between the two of them, yes, the end point directly interweaves, but there's only a few moments otherwise that they really entangle outside of a brief 2-second conversation between flashes of light and stuff like that, right? As they're going through. But there's very little interaction and cohesive storytelling. It's two separate stories that kind of come together at the end in that case. So it was still a unique narrative, a unique way to design the game, but still different than what Spider-Man 2 did. But from the combat to the exploration to, you know, other things in the game, I feel like the direction that Sam Lake, you know, took in this game was just proven again. You know, not everyone likes him, but I think for him, he's a freaking genius, man. Between everything he's done with Control, you know, Alan Wake 1, Alan Wake 2, Max Payne. What's the other one he did too? Sci-fi one, kind of like Cyberpunk. Quantum Break.
Oh, yeah.
You know, between all these games, like, they just have that common thread of being very unique, very well storytelling in a different fashion from what you expect in a video game. So for me, that was this one was an extremely easy choice. And I don't think I even considered anything else. I think I was like, this is the one, and just went with it. Alan Wake 2.
Yeah, I agreed with you here on this one, too. I also have Alan Wake 2. I mean, you've got to have a lot of... I guess you have to have a lot of self-awareness. No. Gosh, I just had the word on the tip of my tongue, and then, of course, it went and dove off into the nether. You have to have confidence. You have to be very confident in yourself, in what you're doing to make this many games, and then tie them all together. And sometimes not, like, super obviously. I don't know. There's just part of like making anything when you have to have a group of people doing it is like how much of your vision as the person who's the director gets diluted by other people's artistic work or whatever they're helping you with. And so like it can be hard to be like, no, I really think this is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Alan Wake 2 is a good example of like you have a vision. You set out to create it, and then it stayed the course, and you made what you intended to make, and it turned out good. You know, sometimes that's not always good, but for better or worse. But in this case, I think it was a breath of fresh air. My runner-up for this category and narrative for similar reasons was also Baldur's Gate 3, just because that game is massive.
Oh yeah.
And there's just a lot going on there. Like when I found out you could cast speak to animals and talk to just about any animal in the game, my mind exploded. So there was a lot of work put into this game. The fact that like nowadays you're kind of lucky if you even get voiced companions.
Like
that's like a AAA game thing only, but when you have like all of these characters and they're all voiced and everything, that alone is just like dang girl. But from a narrative perspective as well, Baldur's Gate 3 has all these little stories that are happening, and it's the closest thing I've gotten to tabletop role playing in a video game, so I give it the nod, the tip of the fedora, if you will.
I could see you wearing a fedora.
I did at one point.
Oh, I'm sure you did. Of a bitch.
I know. I killed that version of myself and then replaced him with who you see now.
All for the better. Next game. Next one is these next couple categories. I kind of threw them because I just thought it'd be stuff that was kind of fun to talk about. You'd never see acknowledged in the industry because they won't acknowledge these kind of things in the industry. So
yeah,
the game that surprised you the most this year. So take that however you want, whether it's something you didn't expect to be good and you're like, wow, this is great, or just a game you didn't even think about or wasn't on your radar at all, but then you got your greedy little paws on it and enjoyed the hell out of it.
Actually, I have. So I had two equal entries for this for those exact reasons in that exact order. So my first one is RoboCop Rogue City.
Okay.
I will admit, not the best game. I even told you, I said it's like playing an original like Xbox game, but in modern day. But like, I don't know what it was about that game. I would put it down for a few days, but then I would want to come back to it. The moment I knew I loved it was the time that I told you about when I found a ladder. And just RoboCop climbing a ladder and all just seems ridiculous. But I climbed the ladder and there's this guy up there and he's like, "Hey, you, come here." And I'm like, "Oh, man, like secret side quest or something." He's like, "Hey, you, come here." So I go over there and he's like, "You see that guy down there?" I'm like, "Yeah." "That guy's an asshole." And that was like the entire, that was it. There was no side mission or whatever. Like, this game, 10 out of 10. But not only that, but, like, I was surprised when there were different enemy types. Like, from all of the game trailers I saw and everything, it looked like, here's just a bunch of meat. Go shoot it. But there actually are different enemy types, and they do different things. Nothing that you wouldn't, that you've never seen in another game, but, like, I don't know. I was just kind of surprised by that. The fact that you do a little bit of investigating, you do like a la Batman or anything like that. There's a little bit of open world or hub world, I guess you would say, ness to it. And it actually doesn't look that bad. I mean, it has its own little twerks and stuff. Kinks, twerks, fetishes, you know, whatever you want to say.
RoboCop twerking in my head.
But
it's, move, creep.
As he's doing it, it's making those like noises. Oh, that's great. So yeah, I was just like, dang, this isn't that bad. And I feel like most people aren't going to believe me. Like, but the moment I found out I could punch a guy off from a motorcycle as he drove by me.
Nice.
I was like, okay, this is for reals. But yeah,
I still haven't played it yet. I gotta boot it up. I just haven't done it yet.
You gotta give it a minute. It does, like, it's a little janky at first, but once you get used to it, there's a lot of fun to be had. It's one of those fun games. You don't boot it up because it's good. You boot it up because it's fun. My other entry in this category was Forspoken.
Oh,
I know. So that came out February, and I know a lot of people were disappointed by this.
Yeah.
And so I didn't touch it with the 10-foot pole for a long time. And then there was this like moment where I was just like, I don't know what to play. And I was able to get Forspoken from the library. Like, nobody had it out. It was just there waiting for someone to pick it up. It's like, you know what? It didn't look that half bad. So I'll give it a shot. I don't know what everybody's problem with it is. The story is okay. I didn't mind the story. The game mechanics themselves are actually kind of what surprised me. The movement system in this game was very surprisingly fluid. I'm sort of surprised that it hasn't been emulated yet. I mean, it's along the lines of like Spider-Man 2 and web slinging. Like, it just felt really natural and very smooth. But like, the main character is kind of a little shit. like it's weird because like on one hand I'm like rooting for them, but on the other hand they're kind of a crappy character. But they change kind of throughout the story and yet somehow still remain themselves. So, like, all in all, for, like, a first entry of a new IP, I actually didn't think it was that bad. And I don't know why people have such a problem with it. But it surprised me by not being as bad as, like, everybody said it was. Because I never heard a good thing about this game once. And I was happy to see that it wasn't as bad as everyone was saying. I actually quite enjoyed it.
Okay, that makes
sense. Enough to beat it.
Well, and that's something in itself, right? To stick with something that long.
Yep.
For me, Dead Island 2. So that's a game that, you know, a lot of people had slept on, and I picked it up because I was in the mood for something, and I thought this might scratch the itch, and then I played it and started having a lot of fun with it. And that's when I told you, I mentioned it in PSVG Land. I was like, hey guys, don't sleep on this. It's actually a lot of fun. Like,
you were the reason I even tried it out, because you had said, like, hey, it's good.
Yeah, it's just, it was so much fun. Like you said, the you know, the gore is one thing, it's whatever, you know, it's not, that's not necessarily for everybody, but if you're just looking for like a good old-fashioned zombie bashing game, like this is just fun. The weapons are unique, the types of damage and how you could damage these things were really detailed, and kind of like, you know, you could almost go for certain joints and stuff, you know.
Yeah,
take off one leg and it would fall off and they would, you know, hobble around. Take off two and it would just crawl on the ground and still come after you. You know, you can knock just its jaw off and just face would still be together, and just all crazy stuff. But the narration was fun, the world was fun to you know, work your way through. The weapons were fun to kind of craft and tweak things your own way and make these unique combat options there and upgrade them. And it was a lot of fun. It's just something I wasn't necessarily expecting. You know, the game had a very troubled development cycle, like, you know, yeah, it disappeared for a long time. Like, remember the original trailer, Jack Black? Remember, like, walking on the boardwalk? It was Jack Black was the original trailer character.
I don't remember that. The first one I remember is the jogger, like the 3D.
Yeah, he's in that one. That's him. He's voicing it.
Oh,
he is?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so like that one way back then was like, you know, so long ago, and that iteration didn't even like come to be. A totally different game ended up as what we got, and typically it's not a good sign, right? Like when we see that here, nothing, and then all of a sudden like, oh yeah, we're still working on this and it's coming out soon, and you're like, wait, what? I liked it. I want to check out the DLC. The DLC got really good reviews as well, so I want to go check that out. But
isn't it like House of
something House, and there's another one that people like the first one better. But there's two out now.
Okay.
And I do want to check those out. The problem is there's so much DLC right now. I want to check that out. I want to check out the God of War one.
Yeah.
God of War Ragnarok ones. And then Alan Wake has the new game plus that actually sounds like they changed some things in it. So I want to experience that. And it has DLC coming out too. So it's like, so much. I want to play new games, but I want to keep playing the old games, you know?
Yeah. I want to add that along with the Dead Island 2 thing, I was surprised because I wasn't like super excited to play as a character that was already pre-made.
I know that's
the case for the game in all of them. But like, I was surprised at how much voice acting and like character they each have. So I was pleasantly surprised. I'm kind of like, oh, okay. Like I can get along with this if she's going to be this. I chose the Irish
rocker girl
or whatever. She's pretty funny. I like her a lot. So
yeah, it was good. Like, you're right, same thing. Like, I was kind of concerned. I was like, oh, I don't create my own characters, like, oh, these pre ones, but they're all entirely voice acted, entirely fleshed out.
Yeah,
and it's like
better
than
Left 4 Dead. Like, yeah, they have that too. But they're like comments and remarks compared to this.
They fully
voice the story. So
Yeah. All right, moving along. Game now that disappointed us the most. So what was your biggest letdown this past year? For me, I mean, when I think of like the worst game I played all year.
You've been subjected to some things, though.
I've been subjected to some things, but it's still Gollum, no matter what.
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot about that.
So I'll be completely honest. Like, I'm not on the record as being a Lord of the Rings guy. That's just not my jam. It is what it is. But the initial first looks we started getting of Gollum way back in the day, I was like, yo, this is kind of cool. I could see this being a cool, you know, take on something. It's a character that's not normally highlighted in these games, you know, as playable, so it's a weird take on that, sure. I was like, but it looked like it could be cool. And I was like, all right, I'll have some faith in here. But the game we got was just complete shit. It was like a PS2 game. It was so bad. Yeah, I mean, guys, just YouTube it. I'm not even gonna get the details. Just Gollum was the absolute worst piece of dog shit I played this year.
I mean, there's some people who like you, kind of like you, where you're like, okay, Lord of the Rings, whatever.
But I still like Shadow of War and Shadow of Mordor. Like, I'm not a Lord of the Rings guy, but I liked those games. Yeah. I can appreciate it. Yeah.
But there's people who actually like Lord of the Rings and were probably hoping this would somehow expand.
Oh, sure.
And then they got this, and my God, I feel so bad for them. You know, I was looking up, it was Daedalic Entertainment, or however you freaking pronounce it. They have been on a terrible track record lately, and I have played some of their games and enjoyed them, if you can believe it. They had that, I'm trying to find it. They had that point and click adventure game that I really liked. But like lately, it seems like they've just been kind of shite.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out, well, because they also are a publisher, it looks like.
Yeah, I think so,
hard
yeah.
to figure it out, so to speak. But, yeah, I can... I remember you texting me specifically just to tell me that that game was awful.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, steer clear. Game that disappointed me the most, I think, and I actually gave it a fair shake, was Atomic Heart.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'm not saying it's a bad game. I know people who played it and liked it, but God, I could not stand the main character.
Yeah.
I felt like it was instead of being satirical, I felt like it was almost falling into its own trap of just like there's a difference between satire and what you're trying to make fun of and then becoming the thing that you're making fun of.
Yes.
And he just would not shut up. And I felt like I was just like, it was trying too hard to make me like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty excited. I mean, I think most people were, they're looking at it like, too. Oh, it's another BioShock.
Yeah.
And some of the design decisions, like, I don't know, it was just kind of weird. I found myself opening a lot of drawers for some reason. And I'm just like, I don't know what I don't like about this. I just know I don't like it. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I was pretty bummed.
Fair enough. That was a good one. I completely forgot I even played that game this year. That's how. But for me, Gollum was just worse. But if you played Gollum, I'm sure that would have been your pick. But yeah, I can totally see how Atomic Heart. I was let down by that one, too.
Yeah, this game didn't scar me mentally like Gollum probably did with you.
Another contender for me, honestly, which is weird because I'm seeing like mixed receptions on it, was the Avatar game. I just.
See, that's funny because I'm actually enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I'm not an Avatar guy, so like you and Lord of the Rings. I don't want to get too far into it, but I think it does just enough different that it makes me forget I'm playing a Ubisoft game.
Sure. I guess. Yeah, I can see it. Yeah.
Which they are definitely copy and pasters to a certain degree.
Oh, for sure.
So, but yeah, I think it'll run its course soon if I don't like focus on it, though. There is a lot going on.
It's definitely not bad. It's not like Gollum. I'm not saying that at all. It's just for me, I was like, I was kind of hoping to be more, and it was kind of like, oh, this is what it is. Like, it's a platformer shooter thing that's kind of directing you but not really directing you where to go. I'm like, and I've seen a lot of people for some reason compare it to a Far Cry game, and I'm not getting that at all, but I don't know. I've seen that a lot brought up, and I'm like, I don't get that really at all. But
I mean, it's people a first can feel free to let me know. Shooter. What did I say? I said it was like, what's the Horizon Zero Dawn, and it was like the Horizon Zero Dawn and some, I don't know, Turok.
Yeah, it's definitely more in that vein. I feel like than Far Cry for sure. But
yeah,
it is what it is. Three left in the categories, folks. Here, so bear with us. Favorite moment in gaming this year. So Lucas asked a clarifying question on it, and I was kind of like, you can do whatever you want. But for me, I was thinking of something that happened in game specifically.
Yeah.
And for me, I'll be interested to see if you have something different, because I don't know. For me, this hand slide won it, and this is spoilers for some folks here, but you could just Google it and find out what we're talking about. That is the Alan Wake 2 musical number. there's an entire 15 or 18 minute stage. That's if you know exactly where you're going.
Yeah.
To go through where the game just transitions from this survival horror-esque, although it wasn't really scary, but this, you know, exploration game where it just is very bleak and there's bad things happening all around you and there's demons and there's, you know, stuff going on, cults and all stuff. And it breaks into a straight rock opera that is fantastic. And I'm not even being sarcastic. Like, it's way better than it deserves to be. Like, they took it serious. There's choreographed dancing. It's a blend of what Lucas alluded to earlier of live action video and the modeling of the characters. It is just something to behold and something I didn't expect at all. But God, dude, that song is on my playlist right now. Like, it's it's, you can get a radio edit where it's like a shortened version of it. It's so good.
But why would you?
Well, because it does get a little long after a while.
Well, that's true. I mean, I didn't know how long the actual song was because they did such a good job of like blending it to your progress.
Yeah. That's the other thing too, is the music in it actually intertwines with where you're going. So if you kind of stay in the same area, the song will keep going during the same parts. Not necessarily the vocals, but the audio in the background could be the same thing. And when you transition to a different part of that stage, the song kind of changes and transforms with you as you progress through. So it's like a live being in this game, but it was just something that I hands down did not expect to happen at all. It happened. I'm so glad it did happen. And the weird thing is, when I have to explain to people why it's there, story-wise, it actually makes sense. They gave you an explanation as to why it's there and how it works, as part of Saga's, you know, playthrough. Yeah. Explains why it happens in Alan's playthrough. It is just, there's been nothing like it, and it's definitely, like, not only favorite moment in gaming this year, it's probably one of my favorite moments in gaming, period.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it definitely is not something I've seen in a game before, that's for sure. I had suspected that, I mean, it's definitely one of my favorite moments as mm-hmm. well. So I had suspected that you might have this, and so I came with another thing.
Okay.
But I definitely agree with the Alan Wake 2 rock opera. This is also a spoiler. This is so spoiler warning for Spider-Man 2, if you are so inclined to have not played that yet. There's a part in the game where I'm purposely making it so you can pause and skip if you need to. There's
a part in the game
where you suddenly are shifting not from Spider-Man, Peter Parker, or Miles Morales. You get to become Venom.
Mm-hmm.
And up to this point, you've fought him a little bit here and there, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
You never get to play as him until this point. And my God, it's basically the only thing I could compare it to is becoming the Hulk. Like, you just rip. Like, it's crazy how powerful you are. It kind of made me think, well, how the hell does he ever beat Venom? Because, like, the amount of power that you get based on, because, I mean, we all know Spider-Man is strong, but for the most part, he tends to be quick, agile, uses a lot of environment attacks and stuff like that. He's not just pure strength.
Yeah.
But, like, then you get Venom, and it's just like, my God. And clearly, some of his moves, it's like, yeah, that guy definitely just died. Like, that guy's definitely dead.
Yeah, you got to remember, Spider-Man pulls his punches. He holds back. He can go toe-to-toe with Venom. He just doesn't want to kill people. Right. He doesn't want to kill Venom.
Venom's on brains.
Exactly. Venom is just off the chain and doesn't care. So he'll go Hulk. Whereas Spider-Man will go Hulk, but he's trying to control it and not kill anybody. You know?
Well, and it's interesting. We talked a little bit about it because this Venom is not the Venom that you would know because the person underneath is not who is typically underneath. So, like, I just love that you're getting that different, like, what if. It's almost like a what if scenario.
Yeah. Yep.
So, I let loose and it was fun. I liked it.
Yes, it was very good. That was definitely my number two. So I'm right there with you. So another standout moment for sure. All right, best cast in a game. So thinking of, actually, you know, I kind of didn't think of it the way you might have thought about this one, too. Uh-oh. So I'm thinking the group of characters in a game as a whole ensemble, not necessarily the people performing as said characters.
Okay, well, I think my
entry... But you could do it either way, so it's fine either way. So
my entry works for both, so that's
good.
That's
you go.
Okay. You go. I haven't, like, put as much time into this game as I would like to, but based on the amount of time that I've spent so far in the group of characters that I've partied up with, I selected Baldur's Gate 3.
Sure.
I mean, I just like any game like Mass Effect or not so much Fallout, because you do get companions, but they don't have as much to say. But any game where you get to kind of hear what the other characters think about the story and the things that you've experienced along the way. Mm-hmm. Any game that does that, KOTOR, Knights of the Old Republic, those ones have always had that as well. And even a little bit in the Star Wars Jedi Survivor and those games, where you get to hear some of the people, like, you don't get to play as the other characters or take them with you, really. But you're grouped up and you get to hear what they think about what's going on. And so, like, to me, that feeling of camaraderie and character building that may not really have anything to do with the story are, like, what make me endeared towards either the cast of characters I'm playing with or the people behind them too. Because, like, unlike Mortal Kombat 1, where there were a couple of people where you're like, oh gosh, that's that's who's voicing this character. This is terrible.
Yeah.
Baldur's Gate really doesn't have that. You know, I almost feel like I am playing tabletop role playing games with friends. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I enjoyed what Baldur's Gate 3 has to offer in that respect.
That's a good pick. That's a good
How about
pick.
You?
So for me, again, Alan Wake 2. The cast I thought was great between, you know, your main characters, Alan Wake and Saga. Enjoyed the heck out of them. But even, you know, your side characters, Alex Casey, Saga's partner.
Yeah.
You know, he's a great character. Mr. Door, of course, kind of, I don't know if he's an antagonist per se. Maybe?
Yeah, he's like a Loki character almost. I want to know
yeah.
more about him.
Yeah, so I mean, he's fun and intriguing, especially in the musical. You know, he's in that part as well. You got Ati coming back from Control.
I love Ati.
Right?
Can't understand anything he says.
No, but I loved what I saw him in the game. Like, yes, I was so happy to see him.
Yeah,
which is
me too.
Weird.
Me too.
And then the other standout characters for me, the two, Saga's grandfather and great uncle, I guess.
Oh,
is
yeah.
Who it was. Who were actually the old gods of Asgard, but yeah, the band.
Yeah.
Thor. It's like Thor. Yeah. It's supposed to be Thor, and I forget what the other one is, but.
Odin. I think it's supposed to be Odin.
Oh, yeah. Odin and Thor. Yeah. Okay. Them, like, it's just that cast. And even the two guys who own or run the coffee yeah. theme park.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like every character in that game stands out and has, like, a couple moments throughout the game, right? Like, where they kind of really stand out and have those great little moments, even for the side characters. And I think the main characters just acted it so well where it almost felt like, yeah, you were playing a game, but it felt like an episodic TV drama almost at things.
Like,
yeah, like the end
Peaks.
Of chapter. Yes. Twin Peaks,
yeah,
X-Files, you know, something like that, where it was yeah. like, it was just so excellently done, but the cast is just great. And you know, the people playing the characters in that game for the large majority actually have a pretty tenured pedigree in Hollywood and acting and stuff like that too. Like the actor who does Ati is actually won a BAFTA award, so it's not like he's
wow.
he's not a nobody, as weird as it is. Like, when you think, like, oh, that guy's probably played by somebody who works for Remedy, you know?
Yeah,
but it's not, you know. So they have things there, but yeah, I just, for me, it was my favorite cast. A close second for me would have been all the folks in Spider-Man 2 as well, because I think it's just a great blending of the cast, between even the villains that you kind of interact with all have their moments, and you know, Sandman levels and stuff like that, like, were really some heartstring moments that were pulled there. But I feel like just the chops in Alan Wake 2 and what they did was a little bit better.
Yeah, nice. I'd agree.
So the last one then, of course, game of the year. For me, I'm going to sound like a broken record. Alan Wake 2 was my pick for game of the year. I know a lot of people had Baldur's Gate, but Alan Wake 2 was in a lot of top contenders. Spider-Man 2 was as well. Just for me, Alan Wake 2, you know, something I was anticipating, but I wasn't quite sure on how great the game was going to be. I thought I was going to have fun with it. You know, like a Resident Evil game. I tend to enjoy those games,
yeah.
But they're rarely somebody's like game of the year contender. This was the best game I played this year. So I wasn't expecting that from Alan Wake, but the things the game does that are just different from something else, between the storytelling, the acting, but even doing things like the crime board, right? Like, you had to get the clues and you had to put the strings and connect the points as Saga when you're investigating stuff to try and figure out
yeah.
where to go. Stuff like that. I had so much fun doing just the most mundane, stupid things. And it was way more than I was expecting it to be, which just launched into another category for me, you know. And that's why that, and amongst everything else I've said throughout this entire hour and a half about Alan Wake 2, is the reasons why my game of the year.
Jeez, might as well just rename this "Why Alan Wake 2 is the Best Game Ever" instead of
yeah.
Game Wars.
Yeah.
Because I also agree with you. Alan Wake 2 just kind of has a little bit of everything. And normally that's a recipe for disaster, but like here, it works. How there were even times when I was like legitimately scared. Now,
yeah,
they were jump scares for the most
yep.
part,
but so.
Like they were effective, and I think a lot of that was because they didn't like overuse the jump scare or mm-hmm. anything like that. Yeah, everything we've talked about, everything, like, I don't know, there's a weird progression with this game where, because you can take it however you want, and like the different, like you said, the boards and everything,
yep.
there's almost kind of like a I don't know. I get in this rhythm where I'm like, okay, now I'm going to sit here and play with the board for a little
Yep.
bit and listen to this. And then I'm going to go, shoot some things or visit the almost Silent Hill-esque coffee world.
Yes.
There's just a lot. There's a lot going on. It looks great. And the story is just, it's fantastical, but it's kind of grounded in reality. So it doesn't go too far from being. I liken it to like almost like some books are hard to read, like they're just hard reads. Some books are like easy reads, and this is a little bit of both. And I think because I can flip back and forth, it's like, okay, now I'm ready to do like what's this crazy plot twist, and then rein it back. So yeah, there's nothing quite like it, and I think that's why it sticks out as game of the year for me.
Nice. Nice. We agreed on it. That's
We
good.
did. We did.
So basically, folks, I know I don't think Alan Wake has been like a great seller for them. I feel like. So I'm hoping, more people give it a shot. Like, try it out, folks. If you're listening, like I said, it's Lucas and I's picks a game of the year, and we both gave it nods in numerous categories. So it's like it's definitely worth checking out, I feel like, and I think a lot of people are just missing out on it.
And if you're like me and hate starting on a number two and you know there's a number one out there, I don't think you have to have played the
No.
first one or even Control for that matter. So.
No, I mean the connections between Control are there, but if you don't know Control, it doesn't add or take anything away from you. It's more like Easter eggs that it's connected. You're kind of like,
Yeah.
oh, nice, and you get like these little nods. But it doesn't directly impact your enjoyment of the game. I feel like if you
Yeah.
didn't know.
I don't
And
remember crap from Alan Wake 1. I played that
yeah.
so long ago.
I mean, and that's where it's tough too. It's like, yeah, I could see the same thing. Like, don't feel like you have to play part one. Part one just plays as a totally different kind of game too. So it's not like,
Yeah.
oh, Alan Wake 2 plays the same way as Alan Wake 1. It doesn't. So you can
Not at
enjoy Alan
all.
Wake 2 and not like 1 at all. So
Yeah.
it's very different. Control's a very different kind of game as well too. So it's not, they all have ties as far as narrative and kind of how they do storytelling is probably similar, but gameplay wise, they are all three totally different games. So don't go in thinking it's gonna be the same type of thing. So
Yep.
yeah, feel comfortable. You could jump in Alan Wake 2, watch a YouTube recap of Alan Wake 1.
Yeah,
Just do that and you'll be fine. You'll be fine. But yeah, so what do you, I think I had a pretty darn good year in gaming overall. Like I think there were more wins than losses, at least as far as stuff that I got hands on with. I think I dodged some bullets with some stuff that people had played. I'm kind of like bummed out by, but I think 2023 was a pretty solid gaming year.
Yeah, I feel like we're pulling out of that whole COVID affects
Oh
everything
yeah.
spin, tailspin, and we're getting back into the swing of things. So I'll be interested to see. I don't even know what's coming out this year. Like, if you ask me what's my most anticipated game of 2024, I don't know. I need to go
I
look at.
yeah, there's a couple things I'm watching. The Suicide Squad kills the Justice League.
Oh, yeah.
I did play, I think they called it an alpha test, I think. It was in the closed alpha for that. And I did enjoy it more than I was expecting it to, given all the bad press. So I'm optimistic about that. Cautiously optimistic, but optimistic.
It's Rocksteady. I mean, they have a good pedigree, so.
Right. Prince of Persia is out soon. Like in a couple weeks, and I got a code for it. I haven't played it yet, but I'll
Oh,
be
nice.
starting that probably tonight. So yeah, that's coming out.
That's the
We got
wait. That's the
the side
remake,
scrolling
right?
one. No, remember they scrapped the remake, that
Oh, the
horrible
one
looking
that looked
remake.
terrible. Oh,
Yeah,
thank God. Okay.
it's the, like the UB art side scrolling one instead that people are
Okay.
excited about, I think, in most cases.
Okay.
So that's coming out this month, actually. And then, like, other things I'm paying attention to is like the Mario and the Thousand Year Door, Luigi's Mansion 2 coming to Switch.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
yeah, I don't know a ton. I feel like I don't know a ton that's coming out. I haven't really dug in and done any research yet. I got to do that so I can put in my requests for reviews. But yeah, I'm interested to see what this year brings. But I think last year was just really solid with some great games, man. Like the Spider-Man, Resident Evil, Sea of Stars, Hi-Fi Rush, Alan Wake 2.
Dead
Baldur's
Space.
Gate, Dead Space, Pikmin 4, Mario Wonder, like Zelda Tears of the Kingdom for a lot of people was on that list of great games too. It's just like there's so much good stuff that came out this past year and it barely scratches the surface, so
It's like all that stuff that was just waiting to come. I wonder how much of this was going to come out in 2022 and they got pushed to 23. I think that
yeah,
has to
I think
do,
that's
at
a
least
big lot.
At the beginning yeah. of the year. So,
yeah, we'll see how much comes out this year. See if we have kind of a slower year because of that.
Yeah, it'll be
where it's kind of regulating a little bit. We'll see. But yeah, that's all we got, folks. So hope you enjoyed listening to us banter about our favorite stuff from last year. So
yeah,
thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. Of course, we are not charging for Patreon this month of January because we took some time off in December. And trying to catch things up and get into the rhythm of our new cadence of show releases. So stay tuned for more to come with that. But thank you all. And, you know, on behalf of Lucas and I, remember to never stop gaming. Oh, we're out of practice. Let's try it again.
Okay.
Never
stop
gaming. Nailed it.
Second time's the charm.
From what I've gathered, you grew up nice and sheltered with mama's pretty stories and your own made-up fury.
And mama gave me a magic clicker. Well, yes, I think it's true and fair to say.